So what's behind this rise? And in particular, why are so many younger voters supporting far-right parties? Well, Dr. Jurgis Samaras is Assistant Professor of Public Policy at King's College London. He joins us now from Athens. Jurgis, what is it about these far-right parties that are so attractive to younger voters?
Hi there. So basically, we're seeing a new success that can be attributed to the status, you know, of young male politicians who are changing the rhetoric around racial purity, xenophobia, and ultra-nationalist vision for the country. We have an example of Jordan Bordella, who seems to use this rhetoric really well to attack anything that culturally is not seen as acceptable in the French political environment at this stage. And he's able to attract a lot of young voters because of how easily viral some of these messages can be, especially on networks such as TikTok, where a lot of young people are actually rallying behind him.
But where does it stem from? Is it just a general sense of disillusionment? Is it after the financial crash? I mean, you know, the cost of living and everything, people are not feeling particularly well off at the moment?
So we just published a study with King's College London and ETHER on a Greek think tank, and we looked at the gender divide in the Greek demographics to better understand how the Greek context can show us more about this division. I would argue that there are two reasons. First, definitely socioeconomic deprivation that pushes men primarily to vote for the far right. However, in France, we are seeing also women now rallying behind the far right. And the reason is very specific, is because the far right is trying to adjust to this new trend of adopting some kind of feminist views. So this is a new finding here, because some of his words in recent rallies that no woman should ever have to fear going out into the streets of her country is very specific, but it's targeting specifically migration. So it's a double message here. And on top of this, we also need to remember that when it comes to migration issues, salience is a huge issue. When mainstream media pick up a story and they're trying to basically play it again and again about migration waves in Europe, it becomes a dominant theme. We haven't seen many changes, though, in the way voters perceive migration over the last 30 years. Once a new story is picked up because the far right tries to expose the impact of migration and it's played over and over and over again, people will start caring about migration. And I've been seeing this in France specifically over the past decade, where people are also rallying behind the far right, knowing that the far right can somehow provide some magical solutions to tackle migration by closing the borders or by being openly xenophobic and promising some kind of white purity. So all of these reasons contribute to the far right, for sure.
Is it the case that the left is just not as popular, or is it maybe that they're splintered in a lot of countries and you know, are not able to form a cohesive party like a lot of those in the right wing?
In my view, the left is currently suffering from two structural issues. The first one is what you just described as a lack of unity, where left-wing parties cannot agree on one ideological approach towards, for example, a general election. It seems that that changed in France ahead of the legislative election, but we'll see how the results, of course, are going to be in a week. And most importantly, the second reason is that the left does not rely on fear-mongering or on extreme populist ideas or in a way to capitalize on issues such as migration or xenophobia. So this simplistic rhetorical approach by the far right is very easy to use. It's very easy to adopt as part of a manifesto. The left is not advocating for closed borders or for the white purity, I guess, narrative that the far right has adopted over the years after Le Pen now under Marine Le Pen.
So the left perhaps needs to find a sort of more simplistic message. You mentioned Jordan Bardella, the leader of France's far-right National Party. He's just 28 years old. But I wonder how the right in Europe compares with the right here in the UK, because whatever you might think of Nigel Farage's Reform Party, it's not one that projects an image of a young person's party.
So I would describe personally and from my research, Reform as a far-right party, and that is, in my view, a fact. Reform has been able to absorb a large percentage of liberal conservative voters. And that is an ideological blurring between the Tories and Reform. The Tories have pushed voters to Reform because the agenda of under Rishi Sunak and previously under Liz Truss has nothing to do with liberal conservatism. I wouldn't blame voters for voting for Reform in this general election, even young voters. I would blame the Tories for blurring those lines continuously, which gives Reform the opportunity to reshape conservative politics, pushing things to the extreme. And the implication, of course, of such, you know, affiliations are quite clear. The youth vote in the UK cannot be ignored in this election. So depending on how he's going to perform, we need to realize that the future of conservatism is changing because of this ideological blurring.
Is it lazy to compare the rise of the right now throughout Europe with what we saw in the 1930s before the Second World War? Because it does seem as if some of the causes are similar.
I think that it's not lazy to do that. And some of the recent developments are quite ominous and quite scary for a lot of different reasons. For the first time since 1930s, we can see a strong percentage of far-right forces being able to influence public policy. And we don't know what that looks like. The problem with those agendas is that they include a lot of xenophobia and usually aspects of exclusion. And seeing those similarities between movements in the 1930s and the rise of a neo-fascist, for example, political party like Brothers of Italy, or the rise of Marine Le Pen under the current circumstances, indicate that social economic deprivation and dissatisfaction can lead to a very toxic element. If that happens, and if the European far right now, with this new bloc in the European Parliament, uses that influence, we might see a very different public policy agenda. And personally, I'm not sure if we should test drive this. This is democracy, but we have far right political forces taking advantage of democracy to push this agenda.
And we're talking here about the rise of the right in light of the European parliamentary elections. But you saw the beginnings of this kind of radicalism more than a decade ago in Greece. Is that right?
I did. Under Golden Dawn, basically, which was something that happened almost 12 years ago when Golden Dawn managed to secure its first seats in the Greek parliament after many younger voters and specifically a new demographic in North Greece rallied behind the party, which was an unprecedented result, seeing a neo-Nazi party winning seats in the Greek parliament after all of the memories during World War II in Greece.
Okay. Dr. Yurgias Samaras, Assistant Professor of Public Policy at King's College London.